Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, November 11th, 2012.
We come to another of the, actually two, of the affections of God, which we find in ourselves as part of the image of God in which we are created. We have two that are very similar and yet quite different. The first one tonight is the affection of compassion. Compassion is an affection that makes us human, or at least humane. Think of the societies in which you don't find compassion. It is very rare. Think of the Muslim countries. There is no compassion in Islam. Think of India. There is no compassion in Hinduism and in many other places. Compassion, as we understand it, is in those countries that have, at least in the past, and perhaps in the future, in the present, been affected greatly by the gospel. Compassion is one of the affections of God, and we find it throughout the Bible. The verses establishing this could be multiplied many times, but we'll only consider a few of them tonight. Turn to the 78th Psalm first. And in this psalm, Asaph is recounting the history of Israel. He dwells especially on the time of the Exodus. He mentions the time of the judges and of the kings. And the burden of this psalm is, God is so good to Israel, and yet so often they turn away from him, and they turn to other gods. We'll read just briefly passages through this psalm, because it's one of the longer psalms in the book of Psalms. It has 72 verses. Give ear, O my people, to my law, the words of God speaking in this psalm. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. And then the reason why he is recounting this, he says, it is for to, in verse 5, to establish a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born and which should arise and declare them to their children. And this, of course, is the reason for churches. This is the reason for Sunday school, to pass the heritage of the gospel to the next generation. It has been truly said that each generation is but one generation from heathenism. And we're seeing that rapidly develop in our own country. And then he recounts some of the his great works in the Exodus. In verse 10, they kept not the covenant of God and refused to walk in his law and forgot his works and his wonders that he showed them. Marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan. He divided the sea and caused them to pass through. He made the water stand as a heap. In the daytime also he led them with a cloud, and all the night with the light of fire. He clave the rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink as out of great depths. He brought springs also out of the rock and caused waters to run down like rivers. They sinned yet more against him by provoking the Most High in the wilderness. I used to think, how could people see such mighty works as those? How could they forget them? How could they turn away from them? But have you seen God work in people's lives? Nothing short of the miraculous, and so soon they forget. After the fact, every miracle seems to be a happenstance. Have you ever noticed that? And that is the way it was with Israel in the wilderness. They tempted God in their heart, asking for meat for their lust. Yea, they spake against God and said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock and the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Therefore the Lord heard this and was wroth. So a fire was kindled against Jacob, and his anger also came up against Israel, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. Though he had commanded the clouds from above and opened the doors of heaven and rained down manna upon them, they had and had given them the corn of heaven. Man did eat angels' food, and he sent the meat to the full. And it wasn't angels' food cake either, but it was a good, solid substance. He sent the east wind to blow in the heaven, and in his power he brought in the south wind and rained flesh upon them as the dust, the feathered fowls like the sand of the sea. And they did eat and were well filled, for he gave them their desire. They were not estranged from their lust. While their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them. And he slew the fattest of them and smote down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned still and believed not his wondrous works. Therefore their days did he consume in vanity and their years in trouble. When he slew them, then they sought him. And they returned and inquired early after God. As I read scriptures like this concerning Israel of old, more and more I see our own country in this, forgetting our heritage of the gospel and turning from the word of God, raising vice and sin, immorality, to the height of an equal with virtue, saying evil is good and good is evil, and Isaiah pronounced a curse on those who did that. When they slew him, then they sought him, and they returned and inquired early after God. And they remembered that God was their rock, that is their defense, and the high God their redeemer. Nevertheless, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongues, for their heart was not right with him, neither were they steadfast in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity, and destroyed them not, Yea, many a time he turned his anger away and did not stir up his wrath, for he remembered that they are but flesh, a wind that passeth and cometh not again. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. And many a time he turned away his anger and did not stir them up. As you read through the Old Testament, read the book of Numbers and see their up and down spiritual experience. Read the book of Judges and shudder with what happened. And yet, God did not utterly destroy them. He judged his people. He judged them not to destroy them, but to purify them. And then read the books of the Kings and the Chronicles and see how quickly they forgot the good work of God. Let us be careful to remember God's good work in our life in the past, to remember his work and to be grateful. But he is full of compassion, and he forgave their iniquity. Then, turning to what is a very well-known verse to us, not least because it is the basis of one of the songs in our hymnal. In the third chapter of the book of Jeremiah's Lamentations, Jeremiah has been called the weeping prophet. He said in one place in his book, "Oh, that my eyes were rivers of water to run down for the sin of my people." He prophesied to Israel what would happen if they persisted in their straying from the covenant, turning to other gods, being like the heathen round about them. And Jeremiah lived to see his prophecies fulfilled against Israel. He lived to see the country of Judah overrun by armies and utterly destroyed. Armies that had a scorched earth policy. After they left, there was nothing left for people to eat. And they overcame Jerusalem and burned it with fire, tore down the temple and the walls. He lived to see all of that and to see his people who escaped death lined up to march hundreds of miles to exile in Babylon, where, as one of the psalmists wrote, they sat down by the rivers of Babylon and wept when they remembered Jerusalem. They hanged their harps on the willows. So Jeremiah lived to see all of that, and he wrote this elegy, this elegant poem, this matchless poem of sorrow for his people. And he said in the first chapter of this lamentation, he said, "Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Behold and see if there be any sorrow like unto my sorrow, which is done unto me wherewith the Lord hath afflicted me in the day of his fierce anger. Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by, to see such desolation, such sorrow?" And then in a more hopeful mood in the third chapter, we read, It is the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. His compassions fail not. Even in the darkness of exile and the destruction of their land and city, Jeremiah had hope. Jeremiah had predicted that that exile would last for 70 long years. But he saw that God's compassion accompanied his judgment. And those who went to Babylon were the favored ones, because it was there in Babylon that God would regroup the Jews. There they would learn about his justice and judgment, but also about his compassion and the predictions for their future, because it was in Babylon that Daniel served the Lord. It was in Babylon that Ezekiel served the Lord. It was in Babylon where they took seriously the study of the Torah and of the prophets. It was in Babylon where the Jews were reborn as a people of God. When we see God's judgment on people, remember that it's in his righteousness, but also in his compassion. I have to think, knowing what we know about our own country, that it is ripe for the judgment of God. It will be in justice, but in compassion as well. Then, not only is God full of compassion for peoples, for his people Israel, but he is also compassionate on individuals. The 86th Psalm, Psalm 86, is a prayer of David. And he says, "Bow down thine ear, O Lord, hear me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my soul, for I am holy. O thou my God, save thy servant that trusteth in thee." And in verse 15, well, beginning with 14, "O God, the proud are risen against me, and the assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul, and have not set thee before them. But thou, O Lord, art a God full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering and plenteous in mercy and in truth. O turn unto me and have mercy upon me." God is full of compassion and is gracious and long-suffering. These are his characteristics. Compassion is one of the affections of God that we find in us who are created in the image of God. But it's because the gospel has worked in our hearts, working to conform us to the image of God's Son. Then turning to the New Testament, in the Old Testament, we see that God is compassionate. And in the New Testament, God incarnate demonstrates his compassion in terms that all can understand. In the 9th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, and in verse 36, but we will Yeah, verse 36, but when he saw the multitude, this is when Jesus, in verse 35, and Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep that have no shepherd. He had compassion on the crowds that followed him. Among those crowds, there were those who were ill, those who were maimed, those who were oppressed by the demons, those who were of the oppressed in society, as well as those others who followed him to become his disciples. But he saw the multitude, and he was moved with compassion. Then in the 20th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, in the 20th chapter, beginning with the 29th verse, we read, and as they departed from Jericho, he's on his way to Jerusalem for that last trip there before for the cross. And as they departed from Jericho, a great multitude followed him. And behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside. And when they heard Jesus pass by, they cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And the multitude rebuked them, because they should hold their peace. But they cried out the more, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And Jesus stood still and called them and said, what will you that I shall do unto you? And they said unto him, Lord, that our eyes should be open. So Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. He was on the way to Jerusalem. He was on the way to the cross, but he stopped to have compassion on these two blind men. It moves my heart to read passages like this, and I'm sure it does yours. And in the 7th chapter of Luke, we read, beginning with verse 11, and it came to pass the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and much people. Now when he came nigh to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and much people of the city was with her. She had no husband to support her, and now her son could not support her. A more helpless position in ancient Israel could not be imagined. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said unto her, weep not. And he came and touched the bier, and they that bare him stood still. And he said, young man, I say unto thee, arise. And he that was dead sat up and began to speak, and he delivered him to his mother. And there came a fear on all, and they glorified God, saying that a great prophet had arisen among us, and that God hath visited his people. He had compassion on the blind and on this widow. He demonstrated to us what compassion is in this life. And let us remember to have compassion on others, and to be careful in criticizing people when we don't know what we're criticizing. And in so doing, in so being compassionate on others, we shall be reflecting the compassion of our Lord and the image of God in which we are created. So compassion is a part of that image of God in which we were created, and which the gospel brings forth in all who will believe it and who will yield to Him. And then there is another affection of God that in some ways is very similar and yet is different. And that is the compassion, the affection of yearning. The word yearning only occurs twice in the Bible, and in both cases it has to do with a human emotion. But in the 48th chapter of Isaiah and verse 17, thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am the Lord thy God, which teacheth thee to profit, which leadeth thee by the way that thou shouldst go. Oh, that thou hadst hearkened to my commandments! Then had thy peace been like a river, and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. A poet has written, of all sad words of tongue or pen, the saddest are these, it might have been. And this was the perspective of Isaiah, who in the spirit of prophecy looked forward to 150 years after his own death, seeing the predictions of God's judgment that he had made would fall upon the people. In prophecy, he could look beyond that destruction and see them sitting in slavery and in exile in Babylon. And this is how he felt. Oh, that thou hadst hearkened to my commandments, and you would not be where you are. Then had thy peace been as a river, and not by the waters of Babylon, where you sit, having hung your harps on the willow, and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. It would have been as strong flowing as a river, and as eternal as the waves of a sea. Oh, that thou hadst hearkened. Then turning to the New Testament, in Matthew 23, in the last verse of that 23rd chapter of Matthew. This is shortly before Jesus would go to the cross, the last time that he left the temple. And let's go back and read from verse 34. Wherefore, behold, I sent unto you the prophets. Jesus is speaking. He is the one who had sent unto them the prophets. And then he came to them as the greatest of the prophets. Wherefore, behold, I send unto you the prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them ye shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, the son of Berechias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Thou that killest the prophets, and stonest them that are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chicks under her wings, and you would not. Behold, your house, your temple, is left unto you desolate. O, how our Lord yearned over the Jewish nation, knowing what would follow their rejection of him. You who have grown children, you know what yearning is. Yearning for their welfare. You who have friends and relatives whom you love, who will not yield to the gospel, you know what yearning is for your loved ones. Just be sure that in our own lives, we never cause God to have to yearn over us. For great is compassion.